May it please this Court, my name is Christopher K. Starkey, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Christy Cortizzano. And Ms. Cortizzano has filed about the 10,000th employment discrimination case with this court. However, unlike most of these, in this situation, we have, the employer has given us a different version, an alternative version, rather than the official version of why she was fired. They had the February 13th memorandum stating why she was going to be fired for various frauds related to her husband having an I-10 since he was not in the country legally as opposed
well,
to...
Well, see, let me just say that when all is said and done, I find it difficult on this record to conclude anything but the fact that when the bank learned that Javier was an illegal alien, that was it. He was on bank accounts. He was part of the health plan. And it regarded this as unlawful behavior, and so it separated her employment. That's not the same as national origin discrimination. Even, you know, let's just assume, as the district court did, that she is entitled to assert that because of the spousal relationship. I'm fine with that. But he could have been from any country if his status in the United States is not properly documented. Then that's a different issue, just as nationality is a different issue from national origin discrimination. The Supreme Court held that forever ago, around 1974, in a case called Espinoza against Farrah Manufacturing. So this case looks to me like one in which the employer finds out he's an illegal, they look at the record, they fire her. There's this bit about the meeting, and I don't really know of what importance that is or whether she has a right to a lawyer in such a meeting or not. I really don't know. But it seems to me overwhelmingly this is the reason.
Is that it's illegal?
He's an illegal. And she wasn't, and she was facilitating his frauds.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I would submit that he committed no fraud against the bank.
It doesn't matter, because if the bank thinks that he was giving dishonest information to people who then issued the I-10 or people who issued the Indiana driver's license or people who issued other things, that's not a discriminatory reason. It may be mistaken, it may be a lot of things, but it's not a sign of discrimination.
I understand, Your Honor. I believe that, though, when you rely on mistakes, first of all, I think, you know, the accuracy of the information goes to the honest belief of it. I mean, I think it's a lot more believable when you're saying you believe something that is actually true and then when you believe something that is actually false.
I know. You're arguing primarily that this reason about not meeting without his lawyer was pretextual, and the other reason of fraud is, which Judge Wood is talking about, is the real reason. I don't see where it makes any difference.
Well, I think it does, because Hubs is focused on him being, yes, illegal, and also from Mexico.
Why would they care whether she was married to a Mexican?
Your Honor, I don't know why they would care. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Why would they care?
Would they have reacted differently if she had come from Bangladesh
or Denmark? I don't know if it made a difference if you come from
not. Why would that be different? Or if she'd come from Canada?
Or he? Yeah.
I mean, if he'd come from Canada, what would that have made a difference?
I think it might have made a difference to Mr. Hubbs.
Why?
Yes. I can't explain. First of all, I don't think it should make any difference at all. Okay, but
But he's illegal. That's the thing that I'm stuck on, because he happens to be illegal from Mexico, but I don't know that there's anything in this record to suggest that if he were an illegal immigrant from China or if he were an illegal immigrant from Australia or anywhere else, that they would have reacted differently. They call ICE at some point. I mean, they're clearly thinking about his illegal status.
Right, they call ICE, which to me just shows, I mean, after they've already fired her, then Mr. Hubbs.
You get into a lot of trouble being complicit in an immigration violation. Look, what is her, is she Mexican?
No, she's a United States citizen.
Oh, I know that, but I mean, ethnically, what is she?
No, she's not. WASP, typical WASP, yeah.
A WASP.
Yeah,
all
I'm right, going to go with that. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, so...
You're not making any argument that I was able to discern that the bank had no right to have this private meeting with her.
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, if they, again, they go to a jury and they convince the reason they fired her was because she wouldn't show up without a lawyer, case over. You know, I mean that's clearly a non-discriminatory reason.
Okay.
You know, so...
Well, that's non-discriminatory, but... Fraud is discriminatory.
Well, when they contend that he's... First of all, Ms. Cortezano has committed no frauds. Okay? They've never been able to point out to me...
Supposedly the bank account used the numbers which he got through some illegal method. I don't, they thought there was illegality involved in the... Banks are pretty sensitive about these things.
Yeah, I think he thought he had some sort of terrorist on his hand or something. I don't know what Mr. Hubbs was thinking.
Well, that's what he thought. We're stuck with that.
Well, no, not when...
They can think anything he wants as long as it's genuine.
Unless it's discriminatory as well. I mean, he goes on
it's
and on.
It's discriminatory about being a terrorist.
He goes on and on about it being from Mexico. It's a very big deal to Mr. Hubbs.
Is there any evidence about other employees married to foreigners?
No. No, there's nothing else in the record about that.
No, don't you have an Iqbal problem? I mean, wouldn't this be a case where in order to reach the threshold of plausibility, whatever exactly that is, you'd want to show that, you know, somehow this is a kind of nosy bank, and it's interested in who the spouses of its employees are, and it, you know, really doesn't like foreigners, and then you'd have a lot stronger case, right? If there was some other indication that they're concerned about spouse. I mean, there are companies like that, you know, very concerned about family.
Well, our theory of the case. I'm sorry. Don't interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, my theory of the case isn't that. Salient Bank, you know, is riddled with discriminatory people. My position is that they turned over this situation to Michael Hubbs, and he ran wild, and I believe he had discriminatory animus based upon, you know, what he said, you know, in the meeting, and, you know, the diatribes he directed at Ms. Cortezano regarding her husband, and I believe, that's where the discrimination comes. It arises from him, but for Mr. Hubbs' actions, she doesn't get fired. There's no meeting, and there's no initial meeting with Mr. Hubbs and Ms. Cortezano, and then there's going to be no subsequent meeting that she again refuses to attend without a lawyer who is not me, and then that's their purported non-discriminatory reason. And I believe, again, he just goes on and on in his investigative.
You can see why they don't want her bringing a lawyer into a meeting with them, right?
For a lawsuit?
I mean,
no, there's no reason that they had to let her bring a lawyer. I mean, I totally agree. I mean, Indiana's employment at will, you know? I mean, there's no reason for them to give a false reason like she didn't show up for the meeting unless they're trying to cover up for some illegal reason, such as discrimination based on national origin.
But you do also have to overcome, I think, Staub against Proctor Hospital. You've got to show that Hubbs is, in effect, you know, the cat's paw, that he's the one whose animus gets filtered up to the ultimate decision maker.
I would agree that, yeah, I would agree. Okay. That's you'll have to persuade that at a jury. Yes, that's, you know, I'd have to persuade them that. That's where it came from, and that's what resulted. You know, but if it was somebody just isolated from anything Mr. Hubbs did,
right,
deciding that.
I mean, that is perhaps the difference with the February 19th meeting, because Mr. Hubbs doesn't have anything to do with whether she goes in with her lawyer or not.
Well,
that's her decision.
Well, you know, I have a hard time. I'm not going to expect this court to rule you can take a lawyer to a meeting like that. But at the same time, you know, he submits her to this one discriminatory diatribe, and then she's going to go in for another one with him.
Well, what's he say that's discriminatory? It's all, he's pretty hostile.
But, yeah.
But he's a security guy, he's suspicious of everybody.
Right? Well, he's calling her husband fairly nasty names that are racially based, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. That's my position. You know, is that, you know, so again, I don't want to, again, overplay my hand, but again, Hubs is kind of the moving agent for all this. So,
okay. Is that it?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Starkey. Mr. Stutzman?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Dana Stutzman, and I'm here on behalf of the Appalachian Salem Bank and Trust Company. I'd like to clarify the bank's position as to what this case is actually about. Right out of the gates, this is not a cat's paw case. This is not a proper vehicle to revisit Staub. Who would have thought that LaFontaine's fable from the 1600s would have got as much popularity amongst the plaintiffs bar as it has today?
What role did the security officer play in firing Cortisano?
Ultimately, the role that he played was none whatsoever.
Well, he provided the dossier, didn't he, on which the higher people in the bank relied.
That is true, but the only stated...
Well, that's important, isn't it? I mean, he's the furnisher of the facts to them, and he's making assumptions about whether she was lying and committing fraud that may be badly founded.
The only stated basis that was ever provided to Ms. Cortisano as to why she was fired is because she engaged in insubordinate conduct by refusing to meet with the bank's representatives.
Right.
But what information did the security officer provide to his superiors, to the people who were involved in actually firing her?
He prepared a rather lengthy report, which is part of the record, that disclosed the nature of the conversation that he had with her at the February 11 meeting, where she admitted that, yes, her husband had paid a certain amount of money to be...
$3,500
to be smuggled.
Has the other side, should I really ask him, but has she said that the information, has she alleged or argued that the testified that the information provided by the security officer was false?
In her deposition, she conceded and admitted that many of the statements in Hub's report are in fact accurate.
Yeah, but that's not my question. Did she say that some of the things, forget about the conversation between them, but what he told his superiors, was that, does she argue that there were, you know, material falsehoods in what he told them?
She never complained during her employment. It was always after.
Well, I thought the answer to Judge Posner's question is yes, if you were forced to give a single word answer, that she, in fact, contests at least some of the statements that are material.
Yes.
For accuracy.
The short answer is yes.
All right.
However, she provided conflicting deposition testimony as to what, in the bank's view, is the key information. It has to do with the individual taxpayer identification number and how Javier got that information in the first place. She testified at one point in her deposition that he used a driver's license to secure the individual taxpayer identification number. But later on in her deposition, she changed course and said that, well, no, Javier used his individual taxpayer identification number to get his driver's license. Obviously, you can't have it both ways. Therefore, there is no reasonable inference that can be drawn from her testimony.
But what's the bank's responsibility in the end? I mean, the briefs are kind of interesting for what they don't talk about. I mean, what risk does the bank run if somebody presents an individual taxpayer identification number that was obtained in an irregular way? Is there a banking regulation? Is there, you know, just are you talking about good citizenship? What are you talking about?
I don't pretend to be a banking law expert, but
isn't that important? Because if it's really of no moment to the bank, it's interesting that they don't report any of this to the Federal Reserve or to the Indiana banking commissioners or to, you know, anybody, as far as I can tell, except ICE. And so I just don't know what's the problem for the bank when there's no sign at all of any banking irregularity.
Well, I think here Mike Hubb's testimony is important. In his role as the security officer, he had concerns. And for purposes of discrimination, it is important what he honestly believed.
So you're saying there's no banking dimension to this. It's what I'm calling good citizenship, maybe.
No, there are banking dimensions to this. He had concerns under bank fraud statutes. He had concerns that there were...
But there's no financial fraud that anybody mentions here. There's this little tiny banking account with $64 in it. I don't see a hint of that.
Again, the importance is...
If ICE calls up the banking regulator and says, you know, you ought to be looking into this Salin Bank and Trust Company, they're sort of laundering... They're laundering money for foreigners, you know.
But I don't see it there.
Again, for purposes of discrimination, it's the importance is what Mike Hubbs believed. And again, this is assuming that it's even relevant as to the allegations of. Ms. Cortezano helping her husband or allowing her husband to open up the bank accounts in the first place with knowledge that there was information that Javier had obtained under false pretenses. That assumes that
They inferred from that that she wasn't trustworthy.
Correct. And so this is a classic example of the plaintiff challenging the accuracy of the bank's conclusions rather than the honesty of the belief in those conclusions. Because, again, Mike Hubb's report, maybe he was incorrect. Perhaps there wasn't any banking regulations that were actually violated. But what's important for purposes of discrimination is the honesty in the bank's belief of those statements. And I think that Mike Hubb's testimony, I think that the report that he generated is all very clear evidence that the bank honestly believed the statements that were part of the earlier memo, which, by the way, was never signed, it was never sent. And so, again, I think the only stated reason for why...
She just didn't like the idea that one of their employees was married to this illegal alien.
I think that if those facts were before the court, that perhaps there would be a problem there. But
well, you're kidding. Why? Is illegal aliens a protected Title VII category?
I'm sorry. I thought, Judge, that your question was, would there be a problem if the bank had problems with Ms. Cortezano?
The bank said, we don't want our employees married to illegal aliens. It's trouble for us, right? I don't like it. Not good for the bank. Illegal aliens are unpopular. We don't want them. I don't see what that has to do with Title VII. You can discriminate. The country discriminates against illegal aliens, right? Tries to kick them out.
Well, and the key word here is illegal, because if they were upset because she was married to a Mexican who was lawfully living in Juarez all that time and she went down there and periodically visited him, that would be an entirely different case from the illegally present situation.
Suppose they put the bank account in some other bank. Would the bank have objected to that?
Mm-hmm.
They might have objected on the grounds she was disloyal, I suppose.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Well, for purposes of the pretext analysis, again, I think the focus should be on the only stated basis for why she was fired. And there's no dispute that she refused to meet with the bank's representatives on February 19th. That was the only stated basis for why she was terminated. The other side
I find it very difficult to accept that at face value, Frank.
Well, but the alternative is that let's assume for the sake of argument that the February 13, the draft notice, which was never actually sent, all that does, and as the district court correctly found, is that all that does is provide the bank with an equally legitimate, non-discriminatory alternative basis upon which the bank could have fired her.
Could I just ask, just to tie up one loose end in this case, I understood from your brief that you have no objection to Cortisano's motion to strike the names of the minor children from the filing.
That's absolutely correct, and I take full responsibility for that. It was just an honest oversight on my part.
So this court can take care of that? Or
yes, sure I have no objection whatsoever to striking the names of the minor children.
Okay.
If there are any more questions.
Except the proposition that discriminating against an employee on the basis of the spouse is a violation. How is that employment discrimination? I don't get that.
For purposes of this appeal, the bank is assuming that an associational right exists under Title VII.
Associational what?
An associational right. Essentially, the situation that you're talking about where under Title VII, can an employer discriminate against not the race or national origin of the employee, but the race or national origin of the employee's spouse?
Well, discriminate against the employee because of the race of the spouse is what I think.
Correct.
I mean to say.
Correct. And for purposes of this appeal, the bank is willing to assume that such an associational right or an associational claim exists. At the lower court, we took issue with that in light of the fact that this court has never definitively ruled on
most
whether or not.
Most of the courts of appeals have found that is
that's
a
correct
form of, it's kind of imputed race almost.
And the way that
the
those
Judge
courts,
Barker said she didn't need to reach it either.
Right, which is why, in the bank's view, that issue is not really even relevant to this appeal because it cannot be a grounds for reversal when the lower court assumed for purposes of the bank's summary judgment motion that such a right or such a claim existed.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Stutzman.
Okay. Thank you.
Starkey?
Just a few rebuttal points. Yeah, my client, Ms. Cortisano, did challenge what Mr. Hubbs said. It's in the short appendix. I mean, her version was her notes that she wrote shortly thereafter at SA 32 through 35, and kind of the bottom of SA 32, I probably suppose is probably where the kind of the meat of it is with her disagreement with Hubbs's characterization in that meeting. As far as fraud to get an I-10, Your Honors, you don't need to commit fraud to get an I-10. You just, you know.
I can't hear you. You're mumbling.
I'm sorry. You don't need to commit a fraud to get an I-10.
To get what?
To get an individual tax identification number. I mean, you go to the IRS, they give you one. You get a number that indicates that it's not a Social Security number. They are forbidden to cooperate with ICE. They cannot share information with ICE. So there's no reason to commit any kind of fraud to get an I-10. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.